It's off day, and the Padres Collective is back, presented by Prize Picks on this Thursday night. Looking back at that Padres-Dodgers series and looking ahead to this weekend against the A's and next week against the Phillies as well. John Schaefer, Matt Devine, Kevin Acey with you for the next hour. Make your way in. Subscribe to this channel. Smash the like button, and we appreciate your super chats as well. We'll get to all those super chats. We do have time for a Q&A. We'll get to that over the last 15 or 20 minutes of tonight's episode. People had opinions on the three games that just played out against the Dodgers at Petco Park. I'm sure we'll discuss a number of them over the course of the next hour, but you always expect a little bit of the unexpected. I don't know if that played out or not, guys, over the course of the last 3 days, but a lot of hot takes, a lot of strong opinions. Dodgers win a series, and these two teams move on from here, but great to see both of you guys tonight.
Good to see you. I think Matt has to start again. I mean, this was the Dodgers series, man. This was like, you know, this didn't go well. I know there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot going on. So, Matt, start.
I'll start real quick. Quickly, rest in peace, Kyle Busch. I know we got a lot of NASCAR people that are, that follow the page. Extremely sad. Passed away. So, my condolences to everyone who is a Kyle Busch fan and NASCAR fan. Just wanted to say that before we get into it. Dodgers series. Honestly, if we would have done this show before last night's game, I would have said, man, this is team showing me something. I was extremely impressed on the first game of the series. I thought Michael King pitched fantastic. I was extremely impressed by just kind of the hustle, the flair that the team was playing with. Obviously, you know, it was a tough loss on Tuesday night. We'll get into that a little bit more.
Where's yesterday's Kevin?
I think he left for, I don't really know where Kevin, he was like, I can't hear this guy right now.
You guys got me?
Yeah. Yeah. We can't see him, but we,
I could not hear a word are. Matt said. I could not hear a word Matt said.
This is a great start.
Now, you guys got me?
Can you hear us?
I could not hear a word Matt said. I'm more disappointed than anyone because I did not hear anything. I don't hear Matt now.
You can't hear me now?
So I hear you, John. This is going to be really rough on me because I don't come here for you.
Do you have
come here for Matt? You're
weird. This is weird because you have one earpiece in or two?
I have one.
Second.
I only put one in.
No way.
I only put one in every time, as far as I know.
Can you hear me now?
Now, do I hear Matt now?
Yeah.
I do not hear Matt. Can't hear Matt.
We got to get Muzzy on.
Barely, oh, you know what? Here's the deal. They say, Kevin, leave the studio, come back in, and it should be rectified. Try that one more time. As Kevin does that,
it's all about, baby.
DSG will take back over.
Hey, well, before Kev gets back, let's see. Hey, this is why you come to the Padres Collective, by the way, baby. This Look is what this. It's all about. This is lines. The... It's live. We'll do it live. That's what it's all about. It's Thursday night. If you're watching at home right now, hope you're enjoying a nice little, some tea, some wine, whatever. Hey, whatever you're doing to wind down on a Thursday night, Pods play the A's tomorrow, but we're going to have a great episode. I'm waiting for Kev to get back in here from before I go on my little, Padres rant, but.
Okay. Hold on. He's back.
Oh, thank Kev, goodness. Can you hear me now?
Can you hear
him? The only thing I care about. I don't care about anybody else on this.
You're a funny guy.
But anybody else on this whole thing. I've been waiting days for this.
All right. Well, I'll get into it. You know, what I was saying, Kev, before, now that you can hear me, is that Monday night, impressive game. That was an awesome baseball game. That was a pitcher's duel. Two of the best pitchers, in my opinion, in the National League easily. And one would argue two of the best pitchers in baseball going head-to-head. Both had their best stuff. One mistake from Yamamoto and Miguel Andujar took him deep, and that was the key to the game. That was an awesome baseball game. If you're a fan of either team, you could say that was a great baseball game. Tuesday night was a great baseball game, honestly. It was an unfortunate loss for the Padres, but that was another game where I was watching that game, and I was like, this is great baseball. These are two teams going at it that are really talented. Unfortunately for the Pods, a couple tough breaks. The Teoscar ball hitting off the base. The ground rule double, a couple things didn't fall our way. Ramon ripping the ball right at Teoscar. That's baseball too, right? It happens. Last night's game was a little bit more frustrating. The big thing that really frustrated me and the fan base itself was the fact that, let's be honest, Fernando comes up with the bases loaded, fifth inning, massive moment. Dude has been struggling this year. There's no one. If you've listened to this show, we've talked about it ad nauseum. He has been struggling. Wow, breaking news. But what an awesome opportunity. You're facing Shohei Ohtani, who just walked Freddie Freeman in his 490 OPS. This is a time for you to work an AB. Don't swing at the first pitch outside the zone, roll over, and get into a double play. That ruined the entire game. We were not winning that game after that happened. And I think it was, and John, you mentioned this before we got on, I think it was just a culmination of everything that's kind of been with Tatis this season. That was kind of the moment where you're like, bases loaded against the Dodgers, down three. So I'm excited to hear your guys' thoughts. I'm excited to hear chat's thoughts. I've changed my perspective throughout the day. I would have done the episode after last night. I would have probably had a bit of hotter takes. Maybe it's because I worked out a little bit today. I burned some fuel off, but I'd love to hear both your guys' picks.
I think I think that's solid, man. I'd be like, yeah, that's a really good take on the whole thing. My only, like, I try to understand that that's not Timmy Tucker on the mound, and that maybe Fernando Tatis Jr. thought that was the best pitch, that the approach there. Now, look, other guys didn't have that against Shohei Ohtani. They worked counts against Shohei Ohtani, but maybe he really thought that was the pitch he was going to get. Yeah, look, they had one, well, I don't even know if you want to call it bad game. They did not perform well against Shohei Ohtani, who has a 0.73 ERA. Like, now, that was not the best version of Shohei Ohtani out there. They, you know, there's a reason they were able to work those counts. There's a reason they got him out after five innings. They did a good job with the version of Shohei Ohtani they had. From my, you know, understanding, like, that was not the best Shohei. That was the Shohei to take advantage of, and they didn't. But really, they had one bad game. They beat the Dodgers one game. Like, if we're going to be all fired up about it, they scored one run. They did enough to win, like they've done a lot this year. And then Mason Miller, you know, had a moment. Okay, they lost two out of three to the Dodgers. I watched them sweep the Dodgers in June of 2021, and we know how the rest of that season worked out.
I was on that series.
I got nothing in terms of if I'm supposed to be heated about this series. Now, if we're talking big picture, yeah, I got some big concerns because of the big guys having big problems.
Yeah, I mean, this is a series that anything could have happened. It's not going to determine your ultimate success or failure. I mean, I think we all agree with that, but there are always going to be strong reactions, if not overreactions. I think if they win yesterday and beat Ohtani, it's kind of a cloud nine moment probably today. But they lost, and the circumstances in which it played out, literally the first pitch of the game, Jackson Merrill's hurt, and the Dodgers lead 1-0. And it's Ohtani who's the culprit. I mean, the whole way it played out, and then the Fernando Tatis Jr. there, where it kind of does just boil over in the fifth inning. And I just feel like that moment represents the culmination of his season to this point. By the way, I have no issue with him swinging first pitch. I have an issue with the pitch he swung at.
Yeah, same.
Yes, I know Fermin walked. Uh-huh. Yes, I know he's on the ropes. I know there was a mound meeting. Go look at Baseball Reference right now at Tatis' numbers. You know, swing first pitch, they're really good. Most players in baseball are a lot better swing first pitch than they are 1-2, 0-2, 2-2, you know, the deeper you get in a count. He's just in the midst of what is truly a career worst slump. And it won't continue for forever, even though in real time, it sometimes feels like it will. I'm sure for him, and I'm sure for Padres fans as well. But the fact that they lost or won yesterday isn't going to ultimately define their season. But with the off day and the way it played out, of course, there were strong reactions. And the Tatis stuff, it's kind of been fascinating to watch how it's all played out. I mean, at the end of the day, they just need him to get out of it because there's no other option. He's not going anywhere. There's nowhere to hide. He's got to get out of it. And if they knew the answer, I'm sure they would have solved it. But unfortunately, it's on him and everyone else to find a way somehow, some way.
Well, clearly the pitches that he's choosing to swing at, he is now, I mean, and I defended him. I defended him here and everywhere for the first, what, 3-4 weeks, saying that, you know, he was reacting well. He'll get out of this because he's reacting well. And no, he's now not reacting well. It's not, he's in a mental funk as well. Now that could end tomorrow. Like, that's the thing with guys who are mercurial, because he is awesome one way and he's, you know, spectacular another way. if he gets going and he gets a hold of some against the A's, you know, maybe watch out. But right now, he is back to same old guy chasing those pitches. And anybody who's been watching him for more than a year knows what I mean. And it's yeah, it's not good.
Yeah, it's not good. I think that's as simple as you could put it. This team right now is 9 games over .500. And I want to tell you their stats when it comes to batting, because it's not just a Tatis problem, even though he is obviously the guy that we all want to be this superstar that we watched in 2021 hit 3 home runs in a game against the Diamondbacks before the fifth inning. Like, that's who we want him to be. We could talk on Tatis all we want. Right now, the San Diego Padres have the lowest batting average, which I know some people look at batting average as like, oh, who am I? Like, am I a dinosaur for saying batting average? I still think batting average shows something, right? Maybe I'm not a Luis Arraez needs to be in the Hall of Fame guy, but I do think batting average matters. .221 batting average, lowest in baseball. 30 teams, number 30. .292 on base percentage. That's terrible. Your on base percentage as a team is .292. So that means you're not even drawing walks at the rate that you need to be drawing walks at.
Is that 29th, Matt? Is that what that is?
I am going to check right now. I'm pretty sure it is. It's 0.01 higher than the San Francisco Giants, who I'm going to see on Saturday play the White Sox in Munkeda Mirakami. .378 slug and a .669 OPS. If you think this team with a .669 OPS has any shot at like really competing for a World Series, like, no. So does that mean we blow it up? No. It means we need this team to figure something out, and we need them to figure it out. Somehow, some way, the baseball gods have blessed us. Is it the Super Bowl pen? Is it our starting rotation? That we're 9 games over .500. We could be the San Francisco Giants, who pretty much have the same offensive stats as us. And Buster Posey is going on the radio this morning, pretty much cursing out Murph from the Murph and Murph show or whatever, their morning radio show. Famous Buster Posey, beloved Bay Area guy, is that there's pitchforks outside the stadium right now. They're pretty much offensively the same team as the San Diego Padres. We are in a good spot for how bad we've played offensively. And someone in the comments said this earlier. I truly believe when you're 30th, nowhere but up. So hopefully, unless you're going to spend the entire season down there, and these episodes are going to get a lot sadder if that's the case, hopefully we could get around 17, 18. And if we get to, you know, mid-offensive performance, this team could be really, really good. So in a weird way, I'm kind of excited about it, because I really do think there's nowhere but up.
I would just say the indicators aren't encouraging. Like, sometimes the indicators probably matter more than the end result. Other time, the end result matters more. If it's the World Series, I'd rather, you know, famously the 1960 World Series, the Pirates won every game against the Yankees by 1. The Yankees won every game against the Pirates by 10, but the Pirates won the World Series. So yeah, in the postseason, who cares? You can get no hit, but if you win 1-0, it doesn't matter. But typically the marathon of baseball doesn't suggest that the indicators will allow you to overcome it if they're not good. There aren't a lot of examples, I would assume, and Kevin probably has done this deep dive or will, when you're 28th or worse in most offensive categories, that's not suggesting a good outcome in the long run. So that's the concern for me. And you can go about it a number of ways. Like, hey, they want to bolster their bullpen. Okay, does that impact your hitting? Or they want to bolster their rotation. Is that going to impact your hitting? I just know this. 2024, they had a great bullpen. It didn't work out because of their offense. 2025, they had a good bullpen. It didn't work out against the Cubs because of their offense. And right now I'm watching a really bad offense. Thankfully, they have 4 months to deal with it. But to the collective point, no pun intended, how are they 29-20? We've said this a lot. Crazy. In the last handful. How are they 7-over? How are they 9-over? How are they 11-over? And I keep saying that, Kevin and Matt, and I don't know if that will continue if this plays out for 162 games. My guess would be it won't.
There are outliers to like that you need to be a top 10 OPS or, you know, right, whatever. But that those are teams with incredible pitching. Yeah. And to your point, like, they're stuck on offense because, like, they went and got Ramon Laureano and look what he's doing. And they went and got Freddie Fermin and look what he's doing. And they have really big contracts and look what those guys are doing. That's not to say they won't add offense or they can't add offense, but yes, it's the offense. You can't even start to think. I mean, I've I have no idea what the Padres would do. I know that they're already talking about trade candidates and what they would need to do, and they've got their big board going. I know that, but I'm not sure where you go at this point. They don't believe in this team. They don't believe this team can do anything the way that it's going right now. Now, do they believe, I need to make sure I phrase that right. They don't think this team's very good right now. And yeah. if guys don't start, a lot of them start doing better, they believe it's a mirage. They believe that they will start doing better but I also wonder, is that because they have to? Because if you don't believe that Tatis and Machado and Merrill are going to get better, then what are you even doing? And I've had a couple of people say that to me, like, we'll just be packing our bags. I mean, what are we even doing here if these guys don't get better? And now I want to make clear, they're professing in every single conversation that they believe they'll get better. And a part of that is that baseball, and it's to your point, John, history is the great indicator for the future in baseball, like nothing else I can think of. Like, what happens for Manny Machado for 12 years what's going to happen for him? He might be a bad example since he's 33 going on 34, and at some point you just fall off a cliff. I'm not saying that's what's happening now. What has happened for Fernando Tatis Jr.? And you guys can talk, not you two, but like everybody can talk about ringworm or whatever, but Fernando's still been pretty darn good post-2022. What's happened for Fernando Tatis Jr. for 6 years is going to happen for the next 6 years, generally speaking. So they have good reason to believe these guys are going to turn around, but if they don't, what are you, like, honestly, just play out the string.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're right, Kev. The guy who concerns me almost, obviously there's two guys. Manny, it's kind of like, okay, right? Like, I find Manny hilarious. I thought the quote where he was like, oh, like, I'm not a baseball player. Like, he's like, I'm a theorist. I'm not it's like, whatever. I'm like, Manny's a funny guy, right? It's Manny Machado, if he never had that second extension, would go down as probably one of, if not the greatest contracts in San Diego sports history. Like, really great. The issue with Manny isn't necessarily Manny's, hey, he's batting under the nose line. He's been bad this year, right? Not a good season for Manny Machado. I still think he ends probably around a 220 average and 20 plus home runs. I think that's probably where he's going to be this year, which in reality, okay. You know, he's 33. The issue is he's getting paid 40 mil for the next couple years after that. That's concerning. Xander Bogaerts Xander Bogaerts is very funny because he's also getting paid a lot of money, and we low-key have, our expectations of Xander are so low now that he has a 710 OPS. And we're like, man, at least Xander's coming up to play. Like, Xander's been great. He has not been great either. Like, guys, the reality is every single dude that's getting paid on more than a 2-year deal on this team has absolutely sucked. Sucked. And you, if you're a Padres fan, if you're the players, they would tell you. Manny Machado says he sucked. Tatis hasn't admitted it, but he knows he sucked. Jackson Merrill, probably the most concerned I am out of everyone is Jackson Merrill. What's 2024 a mirage? There's a real argument that he might not be the 30 home run guy that we thought he, you know, we were extending. He's kind of sucked. He hasn't been good for a minute. He's swinging at a bunch of crap every single game. Obviously got hurt. He plays hard. I love that you play hard, man. You're getting paid. When you get paid, there's expectations. Start playing better. He's been bad.
Much like Tatis, he's in a funk. Like, you know, he wants to perform. It's absolutely destroying him. He has changed like everything from almost day to day on his swing. I just want to make sure we're on the record here. Yeah. Like, he got paid, but let's not compare him to the other guys with that contract. Let's not do that, especially right now.
But I agree.
To your point, there isn't the history there. Like, the history where hey, Tatis will be fine. The history, like, we're all giving Manny a pass because of the history. Like, oh, it'll be fine. Manny's going to, you want to look at the history for Jackson Merrill and you go, oh, okay, what history is there? Now, I've talked to people in the organization, out of the organization, and they say, no, that he can be that guy. Now, is he 30? No. Is he 25? And you know, is he the guy who absolutely justifies that contract and that you want to be performing at that level so he can be your team leader? There's still a big belief that he is. Absolutely. But he is so out of sorts right now. It's bizarre that these three guys are so, not just bad, like their numbers, but like are lost together at the same time, while, you know, Gavin Sheets and Miguel Andujar are not, right? Like, what's happening?
I think it proves a couple of things. First of all, guys, if you're here, please subscribe to this channel. There's over 200 people here live right now, and we will get your super chats. We appreciate your support of this channel, including this one. We'll get to this now because it's just Marco. A comment. So thank you, Marco. Appreciate you, man. He says, "What's up, legends?" If you want to see your comment on screen, we'll have time to get your super chats in probably about 20 minutes or so. So click the dollar sign below the chat box, subscribe, smash the like button for us. A couple of things. This is why I feel like it's ridiculous. When a player is performing, you never hear a thing about the hitting coach. I never once heard about Tony Gwynn's hitting coach. I heard about Tony Gwynn when he got to Cooperstown. We weren't spending all of our time concerning ourselves with the hitting coach for the Padres, right, over his career. But when things are going bad, it's the hitting coach. I mean, it's a tale as old as time. It's obviously played out here more than most markets in the sport. And here's the other thing, to everyone's point also on Xander. I just looked it up. Xander in his last 20 games, I'm sure Kevin's written about it, is hitting 188 with a 533 OPS. He's been awful. The big four have collectively been as bad as they could possibly be. So there is the truth that it's how much worse is it going to get? And Matt's point of if Machado hits 220, they have bigger problems than I thought they had. He's got to hit 260. His batting average on balls in play is really high. It doesn't suggest he's hitting 178 or whatever he's hitting. He's going to have to blow past 220. There's just not enough meat on the bone for him to go to hit 255 the rest of the way and for that to be enough to carry this team to some deep postseason run. So it's very concerning. I take Steven Souza out of it. I think it's again, you can't be like, well, it's Steven Souza's fault, and then Miguel Andujar and Gavin Sheets are hitting, and then say, well, it's not his fault because they are hitting, but it is his fault because Fernando Tatis Jr. is hitting. That's way too simplistic. And they got bigger problems well beyond their hitting coach. It's the core of their team that they've invested in that is not performing.
Yeah, to Matt's point, though, like there are – now, listen, I'm with you. Let me make it very clear that it's not Steven Souza Jr.'s fault and that they also have three other hitting instructors, two of whom were here and that guys rave about, and that's the reason that McCoy and O'Sullivan are still here. But there, to Matt's point, there are a whole bunch of guys and, you know – there's a reason that the hitting coach is absolutely the most turned over spot for every organization. Did Padres lead the league? Yes, but only by like one or two over the last 10 years. Like, it's incredible how everyone else has caught up to them because it's always the hitting coach's fault because it's the most difficult thing to do in sports. Yeah. Maybe I could argue like driving a Formula One car, if that's a sport. But
that's a sport.
That's the most difficult thing to do. So I get maybe for the first time in doing this, because I think it's ridiculous how hitting coaches get blamed. For the first time in doing this, I really have tried to like talk to a lot of people and try to understand. And I do get the question, why the drop off Freddie Fermin? Why the drop off Ramon Laureano? Why I'm trying to understand it, and I don't have an answer. But I am always going to err on the side of, just like I'll go to quote Manny Machado, I will praise Manny Machado when Manny Machado has a 30 homer season. Like, I'm going to look at Manny Machado when Manny Machado's hitting a .197 or 87 or 91, whatever it is now.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that, you know, I'll be completely honest. On Machado, it's been about a year. He was awful in the second half of last season. Let's not act like he was, you know, ripping the ball last year. There's a real reality that this might be Manny Machado. Like, a year of baseball is a long time, fellas. That's a really long time. For Tatis, it's been 2 months. The worst 2 months I've ever seen of anyone that's quote-unquote a star. He's been absolutely terrible. He's been in his head a lot. At least it looks like it from the swing decisions. And it just doesn't look like he's necessarily playing with a lot of confidence. It's probably the nicest way I could put what I really want to say. It's unfortunate because how I think AJ Preller planned this team was to have Manny kind of be riding out. I don't know if AJ really wanted Manny to get that second extension. That's a totally another topic. Ride it out, right? and then have Tatis. This is your team, brother. 27 years old. This is your team. You're going to be batting third. You're going to be playing at the time shortstop. Now, I guess, right field. Now, I guess, second base. But you're going to hit 35 to 45 home runs every year. You know, you're going to be on all the ads. Everybody's going to love you. The kids are going to wear the hair and everything. It's going to be great. He's been trash. He's been trash. He's been so bad this year. And I'm always going to be a fan of Fernando Tatis Jr. One, because I have to, because we're under contract with him for another decade, right? There's kids that are in elementary school that are going to graduate high school before Tatis contract's done with the Padres. He's a pod, guys. No one's buying that contract right now at the bottom point of him as well. They're not going to sell him, you know, for 2 cents on the dollar. So you got to ride with him. That being said, and I want to ask both of you guys this in the chat. How do you fix him? And if you do, you think there's a way we can fix him enough where this season we get 90%, 80% of what we think Tatis can be? Because we're staying afloat right now, but this team has no shot, if he's going to play like this, to get anywhere past the first weekend of the playoffs.
There's two Tatises. There's the Tatis the first 3 years, and there's the Tatis that now people would love to get to that threshold, right? You'd all sign up, not the three of us, but everyone watching. They'd all sign up for his OPS from last year and the 24 home runs. I mean, obviously, at that point, it would be an unbelievable finish if you were able to get there. So I have felt this. I actually said this today on the radio on Schaefer and Sliwa. It's like, I feel as if Padres fans are content with settling. Like, you'll settle for the lesser version of Fernando Tatis Jr., but you can't take another step down. I mean, this is even beyond it, obviously. But, I mean, people are content for him to be this, you know, 20 home run guy, 20 steal. I mean, he's making $340 million, but okay, his 965 OPS from those first 3 years, all right. I don't need to see that. That's what people are saying, but I need to see the 800 OPS player. And now people are like, hey, can you be a 750 OPS player? So a couple of things. Can you actually move him down in the lineup other than for a day or two bat him fifth, which isn't moving him down in the lineup? If anything, the fifth spot is a more power producing spot than he's been asked to bat elsewhere. Can you actually just hit him ninth? And can you just do it because he shouldn't be hitting higher? Or can you, he would have to agree. Can you put him on the Phantom IL and put him at elevation where he actually will hit because everyone and their mother hits in AAA, including Fernando Tatis Jr., and they could use it under the guise of him not being healthy to get him those at-bats and some confidence? Because otherwise, you're getting to the point where it's like, you're allowing this player to like drive himself into the ground. And like, I don't know how much longer you can allow that. We always say like, oh, maybe there's the low point. There's no such thing in baseball. It can keep getting worse because you play every day. So I don't have the answers, but it's just, it seems like to me, it's like desperate times, maybe call for desperate measures right now when it comes to Fernando Tatis Jr.
Pitcher, so he's not like, there's not probably a Phantom IL situation that can come out of this, right? So because a pitcher, there's always something, right?
Yeah,
like
of course,
like
of
Herman course. Marquez is legitimately hurt, right?
Of
like
course.
Matt Waldron is legitimately hurt. I mean, they are like, but you know, who are we all to say that they don't have because sure. They do have issues.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Because you're a pitcher and it's amazing. That's why they don't give half of them MRIs. They don't want them to see what's inside or
right. They
don't want to see sure. What's inside their arm. So that's moving him down. Look, anybody who's watched baseball understands why those guys are not down in the lineup. Like, and that's not on the manager of the 2026. Like they're, that's going to be rough to move those guys down. I mean, at this point, also in defense of the Padres, of Craig Stammen, they're a better, they just need these guys to get better. Like how horrendous is that, that those guys are batting 7, 8, 8, 9, who's batting up higher and are they going to perform if they're batting up higher? Like is Freddie Fermin with six guys batting in the ones, is Freddie Fermin supposed to work up and bat third? Like they don't have that option right now to be switching around their lineup any more than Craig Stammen is, unless I don't know, unless I'm missing something. There's, you already moved Cheese and Andujar up.
Yeah. I mean, and to be honest, Cheese and Andujar though are, I wish they were batting 1 and 2 yesterday, because if they were, if Miggy was up in that bases loaded spot, it might have been a different game. I'll be honest.
Yeah. No, hey, you're forgetting that Fernando got a 29 mile an hour single to get on base in front of Andujar yesterday.
He's been running hard. Someone called him on our Twitter and it cracked me up. I feel like you guys will like this. They called him Fernando Azokar. You know, like Jose Azokar where he's playing. And I was like, man, that is pretty good, because I'll be honest, how he's playing is very Azokar-esque. A lot of hustle, but Azokar doesn't have a $330 million contract.
Smile the whole time too. So.
Yeah, I love Sugar. That was my guy. He's my type of player. But I'll say this, and then John, I know we got to get into the Jackson Merrill stuff. This team only goes as far as those guys, right? I've been calling them the big 0-for-4, but the big four, right? So it's Jackson Merrill, Fernando Tatis Jr., Xander Bogaerts, and Manny Machado. The only answer here, guys, and we could talk about this all you want, we just got to hope they figure it out. That's literally all we can do. Sometimes in life, you just got to pray something works out. I don't know what it's going to be. Unfortunately, I hate to say that that's not the smartest way to go. Like, we have no control. It's tough. It's really tough. And if we're talking about this on a stream on Thursday night, there's people whose literally livelihoods are to figure out how to get these guys to hit. Because if they don't, those guys are going to be, hey, it's not a fun place to time to be unemployed. These guys are trying to get jobs too. So hopefully they can figure out whatever it is. If it's mental, if it's physical, if they need to go on a retreat and just like say, hey, do something. They're at a country concert tonight, Russell Dickerson or whatever. Hey, go to the country concert, drink some moonshine, and hopefully tomorrow wake up and not have to think and just hit some bombs.
Yeah, you know, there was always a term for this, obviously, when I worked in the minor leagues that I'm not going to reference right now. But, I mean, you got to try everything. You've got to try everything to get out of a slump. If you're dealing with the slump that the Padres players are collectively dealing with.
What's that right term, now, John?
I do want to thank our partner, and we want to thank our partner at SeatGeek. Make sure to use our promo code COLLECTIVE10 for 10% off tickets on SeatGeek. Click that link in the description down below and check out this exciting video. Guys, can't wait until this summer. My wife and I are heading to a concert right here in San Diego at Petco Park to see one of our favorite artists, Noah Kahan, and you can as well. Thanks to our friends at SeatGeek. Couldn't be simpler or easier. You get to their app, you find your tickets, and then you use our promo code. And you can get in, and you can do so at a pretty good price with our friends at SeatGeek, the number one rated ticketing app. Over 70,000 events, whether it's concerts in Southern California or elsewhere, sporting events, maybe you want to see the Padres, or potentially you want to go to a World Cup match this summer. You can do it with our friends at SeatGeek. And if you use our promo code, you're getting 10% off. So we've hooked you guys up. You can use code COLLECTIVE10 for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off any tickets with promo code COLLECTIVE10. Click the link in the description down below. Maybe I'll see you this summer at Petco Park at the Noah Kahan concert. Thanks to our friends at SeatGeek. Use that promo code.
You can't teach that, fellas. That was a good ad.
Let me change my outfit real quick. Oh,
that was a great ad, man. I want to see Noah Kahan now. I might have to fly down. That was a great ad.
Promo code COLLECTIVE10, 10% off tickets on SeatGeek. Click that link in the description down below. John Schaefer, Matt Devine, Kevin Acey, subscribe to this channel if you have not yet subscribed. Smash the like button for us. We'll get to those super chats in about 10 or 15 minutes. Is there an update? I assume we get it, Kevin, from Craig Stammen tomorrow prior to game one of the A series. The Jackson Merrill injury actually didn't look good because of the way he kept kind of going to it, so to speak, after going up over the wall, then in the batter's box. And Jackson Merrill obviously is not taking himself out of any type of game, yet still left that game. So I combine all that up, and I'm at least slightly concerned about what played out yesterday at Petco Park.
I mean, I think you should be. I mean, it's a possible IL. I didn't get any feedback back today, yeah. But it's not good. It's the back. Like the oblique, it's involved in everything and could linger. Fortunately for the Padres, for him, he's 23. He's ridiculously young and should be okay. But yeah, you should be concerned.
Hot take. Take your time, brother. Honestly, maybe you can get a little bit of a mental reset too. 2 weeks on, 2 weeks.
You're looking for a little Jace Bowen up here? Little Jace Bowen
the all-American Jace Bowen, baby? Did the wide receiver from Michigan State? I'm excited, man. The Jace Bowen experience. It's not like Jackson Merrill has an 890 OPS with 11 home runs right now. He's been bad. We could be honest. He's a great defensive player. He's been Kevin Kiermaier. That's cool, man. Take your time on the bench. We're paying you a lot of money. Come back rejuvenated. Figure something out with your swing. You got 2 weeks. boys will probably hang in there. I think this is a good team, honestly, which is, I know a lot of what we've been saying, people are going to tune in. If you're tuning in for the first time, you might be thinking we're talking about a team that's 10 games under 500.
Right,
this is a good baseball team because everything around it, incredible pitching, bullpen's been amazing, obviously. Couple oopsies there, but overall, incredible. Even the Yuki Matsui's been good. Chef Yuki, mop up Matsui. He's been solid. It's like these guys are playing pretty – they're playing pretty good ball, even though their stars are not being stars. So you have to hope that, you know, maybe a two-week IL stint to get the mind right and the back right for Jackson could be kind of nice. See what you got with Jace Bowen. Rodolfo Duran looks pretty good.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because on one hand, if you have to go there, then you hope to have the necessary depth to overcome it, right? So, of course, on one hand, you want to be able to overcome it. On the other hand, you know, you don't want to entertain having to put someone like Jackson Merrill on the IL. You know, you don't want to have to deal with it, even if the player himself could use the time to get himself right, even without the injury. I just looked it up. His OPS since his rookie year is 723. He's hit 246 with a 305 on base, a 418 slug, 723 OPS. His rookie year in the major leagues, he hit 292 with a 326 and a 500 slug, an 826 OPS. I mean, he's way down. You know, he's 90-ish points down. That's concerning for a young player. He's had the injuries. He has had the injuries, and it's not the largest sample size in the world. I think the question that Matt asked earlier, like, who is he? Is he the 25, 26? Is he the 24? My guess, Kevin, is maybe he's ultimately somewhere in between, and maybe it's unfair to like characterize him or paint him right now with the type of player he's going to be. But I could see an argument for him not necessarily being the 2024 player, just like there could be an argument that he's not, you know, the player that we've seen the last 2 years, hopefully, in terms of like the floor on him.
You know, what's funny is, and I don't know that we all realize this, like just like, so the media and the fans are going to have different takes and all this. People inside the organization have different takes, man. Sure. Like, you know, and that's the beauty of this thing too. Maybe it's not the beauty if you just want your team to win all the time. And if you want that, go be a Dodgers fan. But, you know, like we don't know until it plays out. There's merit in that. Now, look, if this is an IL stint, it'll be a real one. And he'll have, you know, it'll be his fourth since the start of last year. And that sucks for a young guy. And you got to figure out how to navigate that as well. I'm not trying to make excuses for him, but like that's tough too. So, yeah, these are all legit, man. That's not the guy they gave the 9-year contract and they want to ultimately build the team around is a guy with whatever you said it was. I haven't even looked, but it's disappointing what the last couple of years have been. Now, I don't know that anyone expected from like, what was it, July 14th to the end of the year, Jackson Merrill was one of like the three or four best players in the league by a lot of measures. Like, I don't know if anyone expected that, but yeah, this is, it's not good. I want to point out something, and every pitcher in the major leagues is good, yada, yada, yada. The Padres have faced more like studs than any team in the league. I've done the research, like more Shohei's, more Yamamoto's, more Scoobles. Do you know how good Chase Dolander is for the Rockies? Mm. Like they have faced more guys. You want to go stuff plus, you want to go FIP, you want to go ERA. I don't know what you know, but I've done it like all like way too much. It's why I slept for 5 hours in the middle of the day, 10 hours before this show today. I'm like, but they have faced, and I'm not even sure to what end, but I wanted to know because I now have watched this every year, watch every game, and I get tired of the Padres, like not tired because I'm like a fan, but tired of like hearing about how tough pitching. I'm like, you are making ass pitching look good some nights. And that's true, right? This year, it's like almost night. And I know I realize they haven't done great against some people, but hey, they faced Sheehan and scored 4 runs. They scored enough runs to win that game. So that proves my, or not proves, it's anecdotally shows my point here. But night after night after night, the Padres are just facing studs. Like, and by the way, pitchers are just getting better. Like, so I did want to point that out. I'm sorry. I know that wasn't on the agenda, but
that's good.
I wanted to point that out that it's, there's some other teams that I was looking for my research. I can't find it. There's some other teams that are close, but no team has faced the amount of studs the Padres have.
Yeah, I mean, it's really not – it's difficult to watch a game like yesterday knowing
You know, there's a couple guys when they come up, I'm like, I don't believe this guy's going to get a big knock. And those are unfortunately guys with big contracts. When Miguel Andujar's up at the plate, I'm like, that guy's going to at least try to get a big knock. He's going to swing hard, and he wants to punish a baseball. There's other guys on our team where I'm like, he's up. I'm like, oh, my, this is not going to be good. And when let's be honest, and I love AJ Preller. I actually do. And I've had such a weird relationship with him as a fan, and I feel like all Padres fans have kind of. Look at the big contracts on this team, pitching included. Joe Musgrove, Yu Darvish, Manny Machado, Jackson Merrill, Fernando Tatis Jr., and Xander Bogaerts are the six that come to mind right away for me. Combine the amount of war this season from those guys and the fact that this team is 29-20 is indication of those are some terrible contracts, and he's done a pretty good job, AJ, of filling out the other spots because he kind of messed up on the big deals. He hitched his wagon to a couple guys that might not have been worth the money. So, you know, I don't know how you fix it, except for pray that those guys that are you gave the big bucks start balling out. But he's done a good job at kind of the core around the core, getting that to like keep afloat. But the core around the core doesn't win championships. The core wins championships. You don't win a championship off of, you know, Miguel Andujar hits seven home runs in, the NLDS, the NLCS. No, that's not going to happen, guys. He might have a couple big knocks. You win championships off the Tatises, the Merrills, and the Machados. And right now, it's hard to imagine those guys are going to lead us anywhere. And people say it's early. Guys, it's Memorial Day. It's not as early as you think. We have a pretty good understanding of if this team's a playoff team, which I think they are. But I also don't think they're necessarily a World Series contender.
Well, it's an interesting segue because we can talk. I know it's so early for the deadline, but this idea of what do they need, and we've talked about it, you know, obviously ad nauseum here tonight and over the last couple of weeks. But it's interesting, and I find myself going down this path sometimes where I'm like, well, they don't have what they need once they get to the postseason. And then I'm thinking to myself, they got to get to the postseason. And some years it feels like maybe it's a little simpler than others, and I know they have the expanded wild card. National League's been good for a third of the year. The National League's the better league in terms of the depth than the American League. That has flipped before and maybe will again this year. It's just, it's not a formality. If I was AJ Preller and his front office, I would be thinking about ways I can improve my roster. If I was Jose Feliciano and Kwanzaa Jones, I would be thinking once I'm taking over this club, what are the necessary things that can be done in the short term to make sure this team gets into the postseason? And that's an interesting conversation itself. That's not solely a money conversation. That's an asset conversation as well. It's a risk tolerance conversation. Oftentimes that starts with ownership. The ownership has allowed AJ Preller to have reckless command of the organization. And to his credit, he's been able to sustain success. Who knows what it looks like, obviously, in the future under this new group. But it'll be interesting to see what plays out as we get closer towards the trade deadline. What do they have in their system? What are they willing to get rid of? You got rid of Leo DeVries last year. Would you really do it again with Ethan Salas? Again, all the conversations that Padres fans will be talking about. You got to get to the postseason, I guess is my point. And we'll see how AJ Preller and this ownership group navigates that and make sure they actually do that in 2026.
Like every year, and it's turned out to be true, they're talking about shooting big. They're talking about doing what they need to do. They're talking about everybody basically being on the table. I haven't specifically asked, is Ethan Salas untouchable? They're expecting to be buyers in the same way that they have the last 2 years. AJ Preller is the trade deadline master. They've got this big funnel of players right now that they're, you know, hey, how does this guy fit in? That's from my understanding, that's where we're at now. But the talk already is just like it was the last 2 years, and it turned out to be true. Last 2 years, the talk was they're going to be big guy, you know, big players, and they certainly were.
I will say, and I get most of my prospect stuff from following some people on Twitter that post highlights. So I'll be honest, I'm not scouting. I don't really know. But it is pretty interesting how I feel every year the Padres farm system is awful. Oh my God, they have no one that they could trade. Then out of nowhere, Ethan Salas goes from unranked to a top 20 prospect. And, you know, Cash Mayfield has like a 0.86 ERA. And you start seeing these names and you're like, man, maybe Preller's kind of philosophy, as they say, which is, you know, obviously draft the prep arm lefty who has good stuff, or draft one of the, or international free agent like Leo or Ethan. He has a philosophy, and overall, he's made this team competitive. I really do think, I'm not surprised that he's going to do a good job at the deadline. I bet you he's going to get Aroldis Chapman or one of these guys to come in and beef up the pen, and maybe another arm and maybe a bat like a Brandon Drury or a Ryan O'Hearn. That's not the issue, though, guys. We could trade for anyone. The issue is the big 0 for 4. If the big 0 for 4 doesn't hit, we're going nowhere. You can make Preller can make every right move at the deadline. And if Manny Machado, Fernando Tatis Jr., and Jackson Merrill do not hit, we will not do anything. Dodgers won last night, right? Or yesterday. Who hit for them? Shohei.
Yep.
Freddie Freeman during that series. Shohei, Freddie Freeman, all their big dogs. Obviously, got to give credit.
Their team is big dogs, though. Look at their eight hitters like Teoscar Hernandez.
That's true, but our team has a lot of big dogs. We have household names in baseball. If you watch an ounce of baseball, you know who Xander Bogaerts, Jackson Merrill, Fernando Tatis Jr., and Manny Machado are, and they've been terrible. Those are big dogs. Like, that is an
issue. They should be bigger dogs. There's not three Hall of Famers in the highest AAV in the league. That's the top of the Dodgers order is three future Hall of Famers. They're not that, but they're bigger dogs. Yeah. And they're 100. Matt, I'm agreeing with you is what I'm doing.
Oh, I know.
Absolutely insane what happened this series in terms of pointing out all the Padres' weaknesses. And to your point about Manny, the ironic thing here is there's not been a player more vocal over the past years, because he can be, because it's the position he's in as, you know, the quote unquote captain, and the guy is, you know, calling on ownership to help them out at the trade deadline and all that, right? Well, he can be the number one guy to convince ownership to help them out at the trade deadline by performing on the field. Because if he doesn't, there's just no reason for them to do anything at the trade deadline.
It'd be pretty cool. Sorry, Doug.
Yeah, I was going to say, I trust him. If, like, rank the three you trust, I'm trusting Machado, man. And it's not excusing any of the play that we've seen from any of them. If even ranking all four of them, if you want to put Bogaerts in there, I think my trust level, that's interesting if you rank all four, but I would start with Machado. I would probably go Merrill, Bogaerts, Tatis, based on just what's in my head at this exact moment, probably recency bias. But I trust Machado. He's hitting, I just looked at it, he's 190 batting average on balls in play. I had Dan Zimborski from Fangraphs on yesterday. He said the average pitcher, when pitchers hit in the big leagues, had a 230 batting average on balls in play. His average is going up. I'm sorry, his average is going up. Now, to Matt's point, 220 is up. I need to see it go beyond that. But of these four players, I trust Manny Machado to figure this damn thing out. I don't think he's 40 years of age. I don't think he's washed. I think he's too good of a hitter to hit like this for much longer. But I'm with you, Kevin. I mean, he's going to have to do it. He's going to have to do it with his actions to show that this team is capable of winning at that level.
It's an interesting take on Machado. I actually think, and it's been about a year, and obviously I've been giving him a little bit of grief. I genuinely think Manny Machado's ego and just like how he thinks about himself will not allow him to slump this much. I genuinely think he believes in himself as a player so much that he's going to figure it out and he's going to put up these numbers because he's got that Kobe mentality. I know he was a huge Kobe fan. Like I genuinely, he's had a bad, you know, pretty much a bad year so far. I don't think he's just going to go down a cliff. He's going to get older, but I genuinely believe him. He looks at himself as a Hall of Fame baseball player. He's like, I'm going to be in the Hall of Fame. Unfortunately, that mindset doesn't go to the other, superstar that he played with on the Dominican team. I think one of those guys believes in themselves, and one of those guys is having a little bit of a tough time, and he needs to break out of it. I don't know how he breaks out of it. He might have too many things going on. He gets 40 missed calls from his dad when he gets into the locker room telling him about stuff. He's got Steven Souza. He goes on MLB Network, and they're making fun of him. He goes on Twitter. I feel bad for Tatis. That being said, hit a home run, dude. Figure it out.
All right, let's get to these super chats because people want to weigh in. Guys, subscribe to this channel, smash the like button, and thank you for the super chats. Click the dollar sign below the chat box if you want to weigh in. Is there anything you wanted to say, Kevin, before we get to these
digesting. I'm digesting.
Okay. I went a little crazy there for a second.
Hey, no, like you had – listen, there is absolutely a – what you said about Manny, there is a facet of that that is true. Unfortunately, baseball's a bitch, and at some point it gets you, right? But like, I will defend every one of these guys for their egos to the end of time, because you know what? You got to have an ego to be the level that Manny Machado plays at. So there's a, I just wanted to say, like, there's some truth in what you said. Manny will not allow himself to continue to be this player. That said, like I said, baseball, man, it'll beat you up. So let's go super chat. Come on.
Good, but let's get to these super chats. I mean, real quick before, it's not a conversation about Manny in 7 years. That's a disaster. It's a conversation about Manny today. That other thing is a whole nother conversation. Yeah. Kenzie, thank you, man, for the super chat. Actually, first of all, we mentioned it earlier, but thank you, Marco, for getting us started. Let's get to Kenzie with the super chat. Kenzie wants to say that this super chat is for Kev Dog and asks, how does the finalized franchise sale affect Preller's flexibility? We touched on this a little bit at the trade deadline.
Yeah, we'll see. The expectation is that, I mean, everyone says it, but people say that they want to win and that they're in and that they do have the money. Now we'll see. Like, ownership group's still being finalized. It's going to be a complicated thing, and I'm not even entirely sure that this ownership meeting coming up the first week of June is the one where this is going to get approved. So I'm not sure. Now, that said, look, they know the new owners are coming in. They found some money for, you know, in the couch for Lucas Giolito. And so the Padres are operating that they're going to take care of things at the trade deadline. How much is that is an infusion from, you know, ownership, and how much of it is one of these young pitchers that like Matt said, and like, it's all, the other thing that's amazing about this minor league system that supposedly sucks is it sucked for a couple years, and they keep turning players into, you know, major league players at the trade deadline. So maybe that's the route they have to go one more time. I don't know, but there should not be an effect this trade deadline, from my understanding.
Watch the Miami Marlins if you ever get the chance, and see how many Miami Marlins starting player that are on their roster right now are former Padres farmhands. I think there was a game where they had five guys in their lineup and the starting pitcher and a guy in their bullpen that all played in the Padres farm system. Do not, if there's one thing you could worry, not have to worry about with AJ Preller, he's going to figure out ways to get that farm going. And for that, people believe in the Padres prospects, even if, you know, MLB pipeline doesn't put them as, you know, the number one farm system.
Yeah, I think that's well said. He will have assets to pull from as necessary, would be my guess, come this July or early August with this year's trade deadline. Jonathan, appreciate the super chat. Thank you so much. And again, you can click the dollar sign below the chat box. If you're here on replay, you can hit the super thanks button as well. And please do subscribe. He says, I understand Tatis maybe should have been selective there, but look at his swing at first pitch batting average. It's over 300. Mm-hmm. I looked at the numbers earlier, Kevin. I'm sure you have as well. I mean, he's hit. Most hitters hit early in counts. It's much easier than late in counts. I don't know if that's the end all be all. To me, it's more about the pitch than it was the first pitch. He swung at a bad pitch. I don't care if he swings to the first pitch or the 19th pitch, if it's a hittable pitch. To me, it's more about what he swung at, not when he swung at it.
Yeah, absolutely. He went up there. I mean, honestly, didn't work out last night. There's a lot going on there in the clubhouse, and didn't get to ask him, have asked him before. It's becoming sometimes real pleasant to talk to Tatis at this point. Just a little personal aside, it'd be great if he could start hitting. He's a lot more fun. But I don't know, but that's my issue as well. Like, I'll absolutely defend him on the first pitch stuff. I'll defend him on the first pitch on a lot of the pitchers that they're facing, like Shohei Ohtani. But, you know, Bryce Johnson worked a hit. You know what I'm saying? Like, Freddie Fermin worked a walk.
Sure.
Different thing. Teams are still attacking Tatis as if he is the Tatis of old. But the other thing is, it's like he's not adjusting to the fact that they're also attacking him like he's struggling Tatis. Like, they are throwing those pitches and he is swinging at them. And so that's hard to defend at this point. And I will defend a hitter. Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. Like, I will defend a hitter in the major leagues forever because it's so difficult. But the decisions he's making are indefensible.
In that spot, probably the most disappointed I've ever seen him, at least on the field. Off the field, I've been much more disappointed in him. On the field, that swing decision in that spot, after Shohei Ohtani is at X amount of pitches. He's pretty much, if Tatis got on, they were probably going to take him out of the game. You swing at the first pitch and let him off the ropes. You see Ohtani after that, after he got Tatis out, screaming. You can't do that. You can't do that. I don't care if you bat 300. Also, 300 on the first pitch, guys. We're really glazing that. Come on, man.
Is that what it is? Because I didn't know what
it's over 300.
You're supposed to be the face of the franchise. 300. You're batting 300 on first pitch. Guys, our expectations of this guy are getting so low. Dude,
well,
you're in that spot. Bases loaded, sold out. You're supposed to be the guy. That can't happen.
It's one of the at-bats that he's being paid for. It is. It is also, it's got to be symbolic to fans to that's the guy you want up in that at-bat in the past. It's like that.
Last year, he worked an account. Last year, he would have walked there. He would have maybe had a, you know, six pitch at bat. This year, his approach, he's just all out of sorts, man.
The last month, the approach has been terrible.
And Stammen said, Stammen references, like sometimes when you're in it, you want to get out of it so quickly that it impacts really, you know, what you're trying to, it works against you. Like your intentions were, we've made this point a lot. I've tried to make this point a lot. And to Kevin's point, because he spends time in clubhouses and sees the behind the scenes of what goes into this, it's so complex that you can run yourself in so many circles. And I remember saying when I worked in professional baseball that sometimes it's the C ball hit ball person that unbelievably has the abilities that the person that spends 100 hours watching video. I mean, it's so complex that we think it's so simple. And I've been critical of Tatis, of all these players, but we've gotten to the point where it's become so complex for him. He's trying to do everything in his power to get out of it. He's no longer the player that he is. And that's the tinkering. It's all of a sudden like, who is this player? I'm sure he would agree with that, by the way, if we actually had him on a couch for a drink and he was telling you the honest truth.
Look at all the internet takes on what's wrong with him, right?
100%.
And if you look at the video that's included in that internet take, it's like, man, this guy should be working for an MLB team. And 100%. Then you look at another video and you're like, man, this should be, oh, wait, that's the same guy in the same season doing all those different things?
Yep.
Yeah.
It's insane.
It's an analysis by paralysis, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's, it's like you're exactly trying. Right. And unfortunately, I don't know if anyone's going to get through to him. Hopefully they do, but it's tough. It's hard. It's sad.
So I'll say this last thing to point out, because, man, I'm like embarrassed to be talking about Tatis this much. We got to be more creative than this.
It's the number one
rule in journalism. You have to talk about what people care about, and it's the guy. And so, but we got to, you know, I'll say this. We talk about how it can't get worse. And I it's been my experience in 30 years that there is some truth to that, and that when there's this incredible outlier, it generally corrects itself. You know that there have been 66 players since 2000. There have been a lot more seasons, but 66 different players have had 42 homers in a season. Tatis is the first one since Luis Gonzalez, and you wonder how did he jump up to 57 home runs at one point in the early 2000s. But anyway, the only one to have hit 42 home runs in one season, and in a subsequent season, so a season after that, to have gone 206 plate appearances without a home run. It does not happen. It's virtually impossible that a slugger of Tatis's caliber would go this long. It's such an outlier that you go, wait a minute. Like this is just like weird. It's too weird to continue. That's my point. Anyway.
I've been hoping for it. I wanted that note so badly. I'm
really
like,
good.
Give me the example of a player that's ever had a season like his, that's ever reached these depths later in the career before they're 44 years of age or something.
The other night, he literally moved a unicorn. He moved past Miguel Cabrera. And I don't know if any of you guys saw, I got to see him in his prime and later. Miguel Cabrera at 39 years old, who was hanging on to get his 3,000th hit and to collect his check and to be the, you know, kind of a circus freak that the Tigers brought fans out for because they sucked so bad. He went 204 plate appearances. But like, that's the kind of outlier we're talking about. Like that, it just doesn't happen. So.
All right, let's continue on with these super chats. That's really good insight. Jonathan, appreciate you again. He says, we need Campy back as soon as possible, but broken toe takes time, especially for a catcher in the crouch. What is the update? What's the timeline? Anyone, do you know
he
that?
He caught kind of yesterday. I'm not sure if it was a full-on bullpen, but like he had the gear on. And so like every day I've seen him now. He wasn't on the trip, but you know, we heard that he was doing some baseball activities, but then it wasn't the first day back, the second day, a little bit more. Third day was in gear catching. Like at this point, are we now 2.5 weeks? You'd think he takes a couple games and then they go, okay, well, he's got to come back. I mean, but man, Rodolfo Duran hitting the ball hard and seems to be handling in particular Michael King very well. The guy, if you had wanted to go on merit, you go, gosh, Freddie Fermin needs a little break, man. Yep. Maybe one of these, you know, blows to the head. Another one last night, by the way. Maybe I don't know. Maybe there's something there. I really don't know.
There should be no reason that Freddie Fermin is playing. he's been bad. He has not been good. I know
he's been a good catcher.
He's a good.
I know you're tired of that. Solid.
I know. No, it's true though. He has been good. He's been a solid. He's a solid defensive catcher. But should it be that Freddie Fermin is playing more games than Rodolfo Duran? Because my eyes, I don't even have to look at the underlying metrics. Freddie Fermin, when he's up at the plate, he's not getting a hit. We could pray that he gets walked. He's not getting a hit. He's not hitting the ball for extra bases. Rodolfo Duran goes up there. There's a little bit of pop in that bat. If you watch baseball, you could see it. Also, Rodolfo Duran, Michael King start, throws out Shohei Ohtani, saves that inning. Probably don't win that game, or it's a completely different game if he scores in that spot. So when you're saying, oh, man, but Freddie, like we gave up all these guys. It's like, guys, I'm over who we trade. Play the best player every single game. If this guy sucks, do not play him. It's as simple as that. I don't care if we traded for him or we paid for this guy or that. If you are,
then you're going to have a lineup. Then you're going to have a lineup of your relievers.
You know? Yeah. But, yeah.
If you're going to not play guys that can't hit, just kidding. Let's see here. Mime Junior Ruiz, appreciate you do with the super. He says, sup homies, any updates at all, Kevin, on Jake Cronenworth?
You know what? He hasn't even been around the ballpark. They're keeping him like to where, you know, he can rest. I mean, that's really interesting. And it's with concussion and had this with football, at least once football acknowledged that those were real. You know, we just don't know how long it's going to be. And the more like it really is, it's bizarre what can happen. It's the brain. I mean, it's bizarre. Same. No, I have no update other than to say he's not even around the team, which is really notable because Jake is like a team guy and all that. So
it's going to be a while.
They went a while without knowing about it. And so I think they are being super, careful. Plus at this point now, Jake's got a week at AAA maybe, you know, or, you know. Maybe Arizona, and then a few games at AAA. But now we're talking about a rehab process. So,
that's scary.
Yeah, it is scary. And he wasn't performing, and hopefully he's just all right. And then hopefully they could use him. They could use the player that he's capable of being. They absolutely could, but you got to get him back healthy, obviously. Jonathan, thank you, man. Final super of the night. At some point, you do have to question the approach when so many players are having career lows. It's too many players. They had a lot of players last year. And they relieved their hitting coach also last year.
They did. They did. We said that before, right? Like that. Yep. I'm just not going to blame the hitting coach. Or I'm going to work very hard to push back against that.
Right.
There's a lot of guys struggling. There are. But I mean, it's not just like Nick Castellanos' passionate defense of him, but like the way that Nick did it was so in line when he said this, no one's going to be more prepared. This guy works really hard. This guy gives good information. Like that was so in line with what I've heard and seen that it's like Steven Souza Jr. is not the problem. Now it's a coach's job. Unfortunately for a coach, it's even if the coach can have all the right information, if the players aren't receiving it they've worked on this, Craig Stammen's acknowledged it. Steven Souza's acknowledged it. If the players aren't receiving it, they need to change the way they're giving that information. So, you know, that said, let's try to remember something here. Hitting coaches are for Gavin Sheets and Bryce Johnson and Manny Machado. has had Manny Machado's swing for a long time. The hitting coach gives him some keys, you know, can work on some things, but Manny's not making $33.13 million per year because he's, you know, really listening to the hitting coach. Not saying he's not listening, but like Manny is Manny. Let Manny be Manny is kind of the thing. So like the hitting coach, nah, it's not.
It's I thank you, Jonathan, for the super chat. It's a simple, like I feel like I say it nonstop, but it's like, like you don't get paid the amount of money that some of these guys get paid. And, you know, Steven Souza is going to go in and change your swing. Oh, right. Tatis sucks now because Steven Souza is the hitting coach. It's like, no, Tatis sucks because his brain is all, like, he's all over the place right now. And he's getting, he's hearing, you know, he's changing his, if you watch Fernando Tatis Jr. each week of the season, he is a completely different batting stance. That is not Steven Souza being like, hey, so I know against the Seattle Mariners, you hit like this. How about against the Dodgers? You hit like that. It's like, that's not, guys, come on. Let's be realistic. Steven Souza is not telling this guy that. It's not the hitting coach. I hate to say it. If every year it's the hitting coach, your team kind of sucks.
Yeah. And again, it's almost though the opposite of that. And we're up against it here. It's like, that's like saying that Manny's career was made by the 8 hitting coaches. Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, if not for that amazing circumstance that played out, he would have been a 190 it's hitter in Double A. I mean, it's just, and if you include the minor leagues, these guys have had 100 hitting coaches.
Exactly.
About their careers and their trajectories. Final super actually rolling in again from Jonathan, just saying thanks. He says, thank you for taking my chats, gentlemen. Love this show.
Thank you, John. You, man.
Nice. Before we get out of here, we do need to thank our title sponsor, Prize Picks. Remember to use our promo code HMA. And if you play $5, you can get $50 in lineups instantly. Again, our promo code is HMA. Play $5, get $50 instantly in lineups. Matt, you've been playing
with
success recently, if we're going to be honest, correct?
For how much baseball I watch, you would assume I'd get a couple more wins. So I've been, I feel very similar to a couple parts of that big 0-for-4 right now where it's like, hey, man, they're just not – every day I wake up, I do my Prize Picks. I'm like, I'm not hitting any homers like Tatis, but hopefully tomorrow we can get on a winning streak.
All right. Again, use our promo code HMA. Click the link in the description down below. Play $5. I love that. Get $50 instantly in lineups. So we are back next week. I think Kevin sent that date. Is that a Thursday show, Kevin?
Thursday from Washington, D.C.
Ooh, from our nation's nice. James capital. Wood.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. C.J. Abrams, our nation's capital. All right. Next Thursday. We'll have the next version of the Padres Collective. Between now and then, please do subscribe to this channel and smash the like button. And if you're here on replay, thank you for the super thanks as well. Padres get the A's, then the Phillies, then off for D.C. and the Nats. And for Kevin Acey and Matt Devine, my name is John Schaefer, and you've been watching the Padres Collective. We'll catch up with you guys next week. Thanks so much. Peace.